Hello and welcome to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Thursday, November 12th on Iris. I'm your reader, Erin. Our first article from the front page, Care Center Outbreaks Growing, Area Nursing Home Struggle with Staff Shortages by Benjamin Fisher and Bennett Goldstein. Nursing homes throughout the area are reporting shortages of nurses, certified nursing assistants, or other aides who oversee patient care and medications. And while such shortages existed before the pandemic, they have been exacerbated by the spread of COVID-19. The situation is one that facilities are experiencing nationwide, with nearly one in five reporting shortages to the Federal Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Data collected for the week ending October 25th, the most recent figures available, indicate that at least 17 nursing homes in the tri-state area faced nursing staff or nursing or medical aid shortages. Five facilities did not report data that week but reported shortages in prior weeks. Stonehill Care Center in Dubuque is looking to fill 8 full-time and 9 part-time certified nursing assistant positions, along with 5 full and part-time nurse spots. Director of Health Services Matt Jan said the facility has coped by rearranging staff duties and offering incentives for those who work additional hours. Quote, even though we are reporting a shortage, it doesn't mean that we are not meeting the needs of the residents, he said. I believe our staff are, end quote. Chronic absences. The Dubuque County-owned long-term care center, Sunnycrest Manor in Dubuque, is turning to a newly created certification in existing non-medical staff to fill some holes. As of Monday, County Human Resources Administrator Don Sherman said Sunnycrest has 13 staff out, either sick themselves or quarantining with family members. Quote, that has presented a definite challenge, end quote, she told the county supervisors. Quote, we also just have regular medical absences, surgeries, and that type of thing. We are also trying to make sure we're allowing employees to utilize some paid time off to recharge, end quote. Sherman said that as of Monday, Sunnycrest had a deficit of 20 certified nursing assistants. The facility's new interim administrator, Tammy Freeberger, told the county supervisors that for weeks, the facility's non-nursing staff has had to pull double duty just to keep the ship afloat. Managers, social workers, activity directors, and a scheduler have acted as aides in the wake of the large number of absences due to COVID-19. Quote, there have been weekends where every manager has been working, she said. It's one of those, if not us, who situations, end quote. The solution of non-nursing staff taking on extra duties is not sustainable, Sherman said, but it was made possible by state government action before the pandemic hit. Quote, they ended up creating a basic care aide position where the candidate would go through a 7-hour training, then do some job shadowing with an RN after that, end quote, Sherman said. Quote, so some of our exempt level employees have elected to go through that training and have completed that to be able to help in other areas of Sunnycrest, not just in their normal jobs, end quote. The county supervisors approved paying existing staff time and a half for their extra aide work. They also moved the cap on how many of the new basic care aides Sunnycrest can hire to ride out the pandemic. But those aides cannot do everything a certified nursing assistant can. As of Wednesday night, Sunnycrest was one of 5 long-term care facilities in Dubuque County and 101 statewide with an active COVID-19 outbreak, defined as at least 3 confirmed cases, according to the Iowa Department of Public Health. Sunnycrest had just 3 active cases after 17 other people previously diagnosed with the coronavirus had recovered. Manor Care Health Services of Dubuque also is among the facilities with the active outbreak. Reached by the Telegraph Herald, a representative from the facility's parent company, ProMedica, said a federal testing requirement is helping catch positive cases earlier, potentially limiting the spread in nursing homes, but it also results in higher case counts among staff. Quote, nursing homes are now required to test employees twice a week, end quote, said Assistant Vice President of Marketing and Communications, Julie Beckert. Quote, the majority who are found to be positive are asymptomatic, but they are then sent home to quarantine. The community spread is increasing in Iowa. That's going to impact any business, but it really impacts us because we're the only ones testing this aggressively, end quote. Both Manor Care and Sunnycrest staff have reached out to contact agencies to fill some more of those higher certified roles. Crisis situation. Even without a COVID-19 outbreak, Maquoketa, Iowa Care Center is struggling with staffing due to the pandemic. Quote, staffing in rural areas like Jackson County, as well as many communities and healthcare facilities across the nation, has become more challenging due to COVID-19, end quote, wrote Administrator Sharon Eilinger. Quote, we are closely watching COVID-19 activity trends, testing our staff twice weekly, and evaluating staffing models alternatives should we need to alter staff at any time due to COVID, end quote. Medical research suggests that increased staffing is associated with better patient outcomes and greater employee satisfaction. But a mandate at Orchard Manor and Grant County-owned nursing facility in Lancaster, Wisconsin, that staff work extra shifts has led to burnout and fatigue, end quote, resulting in poor morale and eventual resignation, end quote, according to a county proclamation that last month authorized pay increases for nursing assistants and aides. Orchard Manor has reported staff shortages to CMS since late May. If the quote, crisis staffing situation, end quote, goes unresolved, the proclamation stated, the facility will be unable to accept further admissions. Administrator Carol Schwartz did not respond to requests for comment this week. Nursing education. Even before the pandemic, demand for nursing professionals has accelerated as baby boomers age and increasingly utilize health services. While enrollment at nursing programs has increased, current nursing school enrollment will not be sufficient to meet the projected demand, according to American Association of Colleges of Nursing. The COVID-19 pandemic has added to that challenge of placing nursing students in clinical rotations as nursing facilities restricted access to prevent the spread of the novel coronavirus among residents who are at high risk for developing complications. Quote, we have not had the opportunity to go into any nursing homes or send students here, end quote, said Lisa Rettenmeyer, Clark University Associate Professor of Nursing. Jan said the loss of students has eliminated a valuable recruitment opportunity. All things considered, Beckert said, the whole industry needs a change. Quote, we need to come up with solutions in the industry overall, a better payment model, better environment to make it more attractive for people to enter and stay in the field, end quote, she said. Our next front page article, city plan for roundabouts on University moving along. Circular intersections would be constructed at Loris Boulevard, Pennsylvania Avenue, and at Asbury Road by John Cruz. City of Dubuque officials recently took another step toward a project to construct three roundabouts on a busy roadway. City Council members this week voted unanimously to have city staff seek a consulting company to conduct preliminary engineering design and an environmental study on the project, which would construct roundabouts on University Avenue, at Pennsylvania Avenue, at Asbury Road, and at Loris Boulevard. There already is a roundabout on University at the intersection with North Grandview Avenue. Assistant City Engineer Bob Scheisel said the project is far from coming full circle, with construction not anticipated to begin for at least another 3 years. However, the preliminary design process marks a crucial step in bringing the project to fruition. Quote, part of the intention of the study will be to determine the capacity improvements that could be made, end quote, he said. Quote, we will review all of the alternatives, end quote. City staff hope to utilize University Avenue as another corridor for east-to-west travel in the city, providing an alternative to Dodge Street. According to city documents, Dodge will not provide sufficient traffic capacity based on future projections for the city. Quote, we were told that even if Dodge Street were 8 lanes, it would be inadequate to cover the amount of traffic we are going to have by 2030, end quote, said Councilmember Rick Jones. In 2016, the city constructed a roundabout at the intersection of North Grandview Avenue and Delhi and Grace Streets. In 2017, east-west corridor capacity improvements were named a top priority for the city, which would later result in the construction of the roundabout at University and Grandview, a $1.2 million project. Councilmember Brad Kavanaugh said the roundabouts have been highly successful in streamlining traffic. Quote, traffic appears to be moving much more efficiently, and we haven't had any issues with accidents or things like that, from my understanding, end quote, he said. Schleisel said city staff will begin the process of reviewing consulting firms eligible to conduct the preliminary design and environmental study phase of the project, with expectations of a recommendation being brought to council in February, along with examining the impact that the roundabouts would have on local traffic. Schleisel said the selected firm will highlight what private properties will need to be acquired by the city to secure enough space for the project. Scheisel estimates the preliminary design phase will take about 1 year to complete, while the purchase of private properties is expected to take an additional 2 years. Quote, it's a lengthy process, end quote, he said. If the city moves forward with the hiring a consulting company, the city estimates it will cost about $1 million, $800,000 of which would be funded by the state. If the roundabout project is given final approval in the future, Scheisel estimates it will cost $11 million to $12 million. Jones said he feels the roundabouts provide an ideal solution for improving traffic efficiency without requiring the city to pave over large portions of neighborhoods. Quote, it seems like the best answer that doesn't devour as much real estate as the other ones would, Jones said. You can't build an express lane on University Avenue, so this is our best option, end quote. Our last front page article, military service runs in their blood. Virus-affected Veterans Day ceremony in Dubuque honors multiple generations of local service members, by Kaylee Reese. Tom Reed of Dubuque spoke to a group of about 100 people Wednesday, sharing a story about watching his father honor his fellow veterans every day at the flagpole he put in his house on White Street. Quote, he put up the flag every morning and he took it down every evening, end quote, Reed said, voice full of emotion. Quote, he did that every day until he was too sick, end quote. When asked why he chose to join the military at the age of 31, Reed, also a retired firefighter, points to his numerous veteran relatives. He spent 20 years as a U.S. Navy Reserve CB, providing construction support to military battalions. His service included being sent to Iraq in 2006, where his battalion helped build a hospital in U.S. Marine barracks. Reed was the guest speaker for this year's Veterans Day ceremony, held by Dubuque American Legion Post 6 at Marshall Park in Dubuque. Quote, I was lucky enough to have served with many great sailors, end quote, he said. Quote, I was lucky enough to serve with good friends who I'm sure I'll see down at the Legion later, end quote. The East Dubuque Drum and Bugle Corps and the Dubuque Fire Pipe and Drums both performed at the base of Battle Bows Memorial, rounding out the ceremony with a rendition of Taps as masked spectators surrounded them. Attendees were told to bring their own lawn chairs, which familial groups set up in socially distanced clustered around the park. This was the first ceremony that was held at the park, as the indoor Mystique Community Ice Center space typically used wasn't feasible amid the COVID-19 pandemic. The ceremony also couldn't be held this year at Veterans Memorial Plaza, which is closed due to construction. The work, which should be completed in the spring of 2021, includes relocating the Tri-State Vietnam Veterans Memorial and installing a large sculpture dubbed Sky Ward on a newly installed boardwalk over the water. American Legion Post 6 Commander John Zeitmitt and past Legion Commander Dick Bridges both were part of the group that organized this year's ceremony. After having a successful outdoor Memorial Day ceremony, Bridges said they started scoping out places for Veterans Day. Both men liked how the park offered a place both pretty and quiet, as the noise of traffic wasn't able to interrupt the proceeding honoring those who served. Having an indoor ceremony wasn't, quote, the right thing to do, end quote, as COVID-19 case totals continue to rise, Bridges said, but have some sort of event was extremely important. Quote, you gotta have a Veterans Day, Bridges said. If not, that's sad if you're not going to honor veterans once a year. Some of these guys might not be here next year, end quote. Zeitmitt added that he was grateful that the sun came out for the ceremony, which would have been canceled if the weather was less than favorable. However, he did have to tell the crowd that the chili feed they have had for, quote, a billion years, end quote, after the Veterans Day ceremony was canceled due to COVID-19. Quote, what a nice day this has really came together, Zeitmitt said. In the midst of the virus, this was a bright spot in a not very nice fall, end quote. Leon Sonskin of Dubuque attended the Veterans Day ceremony for the first time. Sonskin, who served in the Navy from 1946 to 1976, recently moved to Dubuque from Colorado to marry the woman he dated as a University of Dubuque student. Sonskin said he always enjoyed attending Veterans Day celebrations, and coming out to the park to salute with fellow veterans was no exception. Quote, I remember Veterans Day celebrations when I was a kid. I would wrap my bike in crepe paper and be in the parade, he said. My dad was a World War I veteran. I've still got his uniforms that I still wear sometimes, end quote. Speaking about his own father and other family members who served, Reed noted that around 80% of those serving in the military have family who are also veterans. In addition to paying tribute to those fellow veterans, he highlighted the sacrifices of veterans' families. Quote, for all of us vets standing here, it was also said that those back home are also serving, end quote, he said. Moving to the Dubuque and Tri-State page, four more Tri-State deaths linked to COVID-19. Dubuque County adds 177 infections, Telegraph Herald. Each day, the Telegraph Herald is recapping changes in local COVID-19 testing and recovery. Wednesday's developments included there were four new deaths related to COVID-19 reported in the Tri-State region as of Wednesday evening. Dubuque County had one additional death reported between 5 p.m. Tuesday and 5 p.m. Wednesday, as did Jones County, as well as Crawford and Iowa counties in the Wisconsin. An additional 177 cases of COVID-19 in Dubuque County were confirmed in that 24-hour span. The county's 14-day positivity rate climbed to 23.5%. By subtracting the number of related deaths and recovered in the county from the number of confirmed cases, there were 2,708 active cases as of 5 p.m. Wednesday, an increase of 101 from the previous 24-hour period. Jones County had 43 additional cases in that 24-hour period. The county's case count has jumped in conjunction with an outbreak at Anamosa State Penitentiary. A total of 494 inmates' cases have been reported, as well as one inmate death and 18 active cases among staff members. Jones County 14-day positivity rate rose to 44.5% as of 5 p.m. Wednesday, the highest in the state. Jackson County had 44 additional cases as of 5 p.m. Wednesday. The county's 14-day positivity rate climbed to 31.7% at that time, the fifth highest in Iowa. Clayton County increased by 19 cases, and its positivity rate was at 25.8%. Delaware County had 35 new cases and a positivity rate of 24.4%. The state now is tracking outbreaks at 9 area long-term care centers. As of 5 p.m. Wednesday, they were Luther Manor Communities, Dubuque, 76 cases, plus 2, and 13 recovered. Mercy 1, Dyersville, Senior Care, 35 cases, 31 recovered. Manor Care Health Services of Dubuque, 11 cases, 3 recovered. Sunnycrest Manor of Dubuque, 20 cases, 17 recovered. Shady Rest Care Center of Cascade, 7 cases, 2 recovered. Good Neighbor Home of Manchester, 81 cases, 64 recovered. Edgewood Convalescent Home, 7 cases, 2 recovered. Anamosa Care Center, 38 cases, none recovered. Monticello Nursing and Rehab Center, 6 cases, none recovered. The most recent county-level hospitalization information released by the state was from Monday. The data shows 43 Dubuque County residents hospitalized, 15 Clayton County residents, 9 Delaware County residents, 27 Jackson County residents, and 15 Jones County residents. Iowa's statewide confirmed cases rose by 5,040 to reach 166,844. The state's related death toll increased by 26 to 1,900. In Wisconsin, Grant County reported 119 new cases Wednesday, Iowa County 47, Lafayette County 31, and Crawford County 23. The Wisconsin Department of Health Service added a critically high category to the disease activity dashboard to give Wisconsinites a better picture of the impact of COVID-19 in the state. The critically high category is nearly 3 times higher than the very high. Both the state and 65 counties were at this critically high level Wednesday, including Grant, Iowa, Lafayette, and Crawford counties. Statewide, Wisconsin reported 7,048 new cases Wednesday, pushing the total to 285,891. There were 62 additional related deaths reported, so the state count moved to 2,457. In Illinois, Joe Davies County had 2 additional cases. Statewide, there were 12,657 new confirmed cases reported Wednesday, along with 145 additional deaths. That pushed the state's total to 523,840 cases and 10,434 deaths. Manchester gets down to business. XL specialized tailors will add 65 jobs. Council approves plan for grocery store by Annie Mell, Manchester, Iowa. The city of Manchester is gearing up for growth as a local business looks to expand and employ a new line of workers while an unrelated grocery store development moves forward. XL specialized tailors plans a $5 million to $6 million expansion project that would add 55,000 square feet to its facility and create 65 new positions by the end of 2021, said President and CEO Stuart Supper. Quote, that will really enable us to serve our customers better, he said. We will be able to reduce our wait times and capture more of the market, end quote. The company currently employs 160 people in Manchester. Supper said XL had a record year for sales in 2019, but when the COVID-19 pandemic hit, it slowed down the company's plans for growth. Quote, we survived very well, he said. We know, given where we were in 2019, that when the economy comes back, we will be well positioned to continue growing. We are very excited about 2021, end quote. XL is working with the state in addition to the city to receive zoning permits and tax incentives, and the company hopes to begin construction on the project by the end of this year. City Manager Tim Vick said city council members will hold a public hearing during their December 14th meeting on a resolution to award XL specialized tailors an 80% tax rebate of up to $1.2 million over the course of the 10-year agreement. This financing method incentivizes property owners to improve or renovate their buildings by giving them back a portion of their increased property taxes they would have incurred as a result of their improvements. In an unrelated move, council members recently approved an agreement with Brian Ridge of BR Development, who plans to construct a 27,500 square foot grocery store on West Marion Street behind Pizza Ranch. The project is estimated to cost about $5.5 million and create 50 jobs. Officials have not disclosed specific details about the new store. Ridge recently entered into a similar agreement with the city of Maquoketa and is planning to develop a Dollar Fresh grocery store there. The Manchester project will receive an 80% tax rebate of up to $1.2 million with a 12-year agreement. Vick said the location had stormwater infrastructure needs that the developer will pay to repair, so the project received a longer tax rebate. Despite the pandemic, it had been quite a year of development for Manchester. Vick noted that Stanley Black & Decker is undertaking an expansion project that will create about 50 new jobs and grow the operation by about 70,000 square feet. Quote, we will have a number of new jobs coming to Manchester next year, end quote, Vick said. Our next article, Hempstead Student States the Case for Youth in Iowa by Ali Hinga. Kunal Chuga seeks to provide a voice to the issues impacting young people in Iowa. As a member of the State of Iowa Youth Advisory Council, he and his peers take their concerns and draft them into proposals to bring before state lawmakers. Quote, we think it's important to advocate these issues, end quote, said Chug, a senior at Hempstead High School in Dubuque. Quote, otherwise there isn't anybody to do it for us, end quote. Chug has been on the council since 2018. He said he takes seriously the responsibility to represent Iowa's youth, plus he has learned plenty about the legislative process along the way. Quote, I think it's a really great way to make change for a wide group of people, and talking with the people who shape the lives of our state is pretty cool, end quote, Chug said. The council is a nonpartisan organization under the Iowa Department of Human Rights. Each year, Chug and other young people on the council draft their concerns into proposed legislation and priorities that they share with the state legislators. Chug is on the council's health committee, whose members are working on ways to advance gender equity for youth. In particular, they are focusing on a bill that would require public schools to provide feminine hygiene products for students, and also looking at protecting the rights of people who identify as intersex and stopping gay conversion therapy in Iowa. Quote, at our meetings, we talk about youth issues that we see in our schools that are important to youth, end quote, Chug said. He also is the council's legislative affairs chairman and manages the legislation his group proposes. Quote, I'm basically going through the Iowa legislator website every couple of days, emailing legislators to see if they would sponsor our bills, end quote, Chug said. He said his time on the council has been a learning experience. Quote, I've learned a lot of stuff about the legislative process, but more importantly, I get to meet a lot of different youth coming from a lot of different backgrounds, which expands my perspective, end quote, he said. When he isn't busy with his council activities, he also stays involved at school. Chug is on the school's debate team and earlier this year competed in the National Speech and Debate Tournament. He also is on the school's math modeling team, plays tennis, runs cross country, and enjoys playing chess and volunteering. Hempstead School Council Natalie Nemers described Chug as humble, thoughtful, and a gentle leader. Quote, he brings his quiet leadership that is powerful because he is so incredibly intelligent, she said. His message is very clear, but it's very gentle and respectful, and I feel like he really models that leadership as well, end quote. Our next article, leader of Hills and Dales set to retire next summer, Telegraph Herald. The longtime leader of a local nonprofit will retire next summer. Hills and Dales CEO Marilyn Altop will step down from her position in July, according to a press release issued by the Dubuque-based organization. Altop has spent 32 years with Hills and Dales, including 16 as the nonprofit's CEO. Founded in 1973, Hills and Dales provides services to children and young adults with disabilities in Eastern Iowa. The scope of the nonprofit expanded significantly during Altoff's time as CEO, and the organization now employs 450 people. A local and nationwide search for Altoff's successor is underway, the press release stated. Officials hope to announce the new CEO in early 2021 and intended for that person to work alongside Altoff in a transition period before officially taking the reins. Altoff plans to spend her retirement traveling and spending more time with family members, the release states. News in brief, Dubuque County Supervisors okay $125,000 in grants to fire EMS departments. The Dubuque County Board of Supervisors recently awarded 7 Tom Hancock Memorial Fire and EMS Grant Program grants totaling $125,000. The supervisors created the annual $125,000 fund in 2019 in honor of Hancock, the late former supervisor, state senator, and chief of the Epworth Fire Department, who died partway through his first term on the board in January 2016. The awards went to the Dyersville Fire Department, received $26,275 this year for an engine replacement, the largest award. The Bernard Rescue Unit received $25,000 toward an ambulance replacement. The Centralia Piosta Fire Department received $25,000 for PPE turnout gear. The Epworth Fire Department received $20,000 for extraction tools. Worthington Community Fire Department received $15,000 for PPE turnout gear. The Holy Cross North Buena Vista Fire Department received $7,500 for a cardiac monitor and defibrillator. Charles Volunteer Firefighters received $6,225 to replace thermal imaging equipment. Salvation Army to kick off kettle campaign. The Salvation Army of Dubuque will kick off its annual kettle campaign on Friday, November 13th. Officials hope to raise $224,000 in an overall campaign, with a goal of $115,000 coming directly from the distinctive red kettles. The funds are used to support children's programs and aid local families in need, provide food vouchers, and benefits the Salvation Army's toy shop, according to a press release. The ongoing pandemic has reshaped this year's campaign. A kickoff event had been slated for Friday's Dubuque Fighting Saints game, but it has been pushed back to November 28th. This year, Salvation Army has introduced virtual kettles that allows residents to donate funds online. Those interested can donate virtually by visiting www.sadubuque.org. Local probe led to doctor's federal conviction, Manchester, Iowa. An investigation by the Manchester Police Department and U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration led to a federal conviction of a podiatrist who wrote fraudulent hydrocodone prescriptions to others so they would fill them and give him pills. Dr. Stephen W. Beavers, 58, of Cedar Rapids, recently was sentenced in U.S. District Court in Cedar Rapids to 5 years of probation, including 6 months of home confinement and 100 hours of community service. He also must pay a $20,000 fine. The sentence came after he pleaded guilty to one count of acquiring a controlled substance by misrepresentation, fraud, deception of subterfuge, according to a press release. It states that Beavers was the owner of Podiatry Associates PC, which had locations in Delaware, Jones, and Linn counties. Police, the Dubuque Police and Dubuque County Sheriff's Department reported Edward P. Monroe, 33, no permanent address, was arrested at 8:45 a.m. Tuesday at Dubuque Law Enforcement Center on warrants charging third-degree burglary, failure to appear in court, and probation violations. Trent C. Fabila Gassman, 29, of 2635 University of Avenue, was arrested at 9:16 p.m. Monday at his residence on charges of domestic assault and child endangerment. Court documents state that Fabila Gassman assaulted Alyssa M. Scholes, 26, of the same address in the presence of their three-month-old child. Savona L. Williams, 24, of 2501 Washington Street, reported $800 worth of criminal damage done to a vehicle between 2:45 and 9:30 a.m. Monday while it was parked in the 1400 block of Central Avenue. Loras College reported the theft of an $800 computer between midnight Saturday and 9 p.m. Sunday. Obituaries: Burnell L. Dieter, Cuba City, Wisconsin. Burnell Lewis Dieter, 94, of Cuba City, Wisconsin, died Tuesday, November 10th, 2020, at Epion Pavilion, Cuba City. A massive Christian burial will be held at 2 p.m. Saturday, November 14th, 2020, at St. Rose Catholic Church, Cuba City, with Reverend Bernard Rott and Deacon Bill Buzen officiating. Services will be live-streamed through Facebook on the funeral home page. Graveside ceremony will follow at Hillside Cemetery in Platteville, Wisconsin. A public visitation for family and friends will take place from noon to 1:45 p.m. Saturday at the church before the service. Family requests you utilize masks during the duration of your visit in the church and that you practice social distancing. Casey McNett Funeral Home and Cremation Services of Cuba City is assisting the family. Burnell was born on July 2, 1926 in Cuba City, the son of Herbert and Elsie Dieters Dieter. He attended the Vondra and Casper School, one-room schoolhouses. He worked with his parents, his wife, and children on the family farm on Clay Hollow Road until he sold it in 1992 after the loss of his son, Mark. It was just a few years from being a century family farm. He shared his love of coon hunting, fishing, cracking walnuts, making cowboy cookies, and always an avid euchre game with neighbors, friends, and family. On June 2, 1948, he married Teresa Ann Hickey in Galena, Illinois. Burnell and Teresa worked side by side on the family farm with their five children and were married 49 years. Burnell and his wife, Teresa, taught their children hard work and love of family. Burnell was a member of the NFO, FFA, St. Rose Parish, and Coal Acres. In his 50s, he started golfing and was truly excited about his three hole-in-ones. After Teresa died in 1997, Burnell was very fortunate to meet Harriet Edge Gerke, a loving, faith-filled wife. They were united in marriage on October 23, 1999. He enjoyed trips to Branson, Washington, D.C., Hawaii, Norway, Denmark, Sweden, and fishing with great friends, Ron and Linda Eartham. It was with this love, compassion, and faith in God, they were blessed with 21 years of marriage. Burnell is survived by his wife, Harriet, one son, Ronald, spouse Lynn Loffenholz Dieter of Ames, Iowa, three daughters, Donna, spouse Patrick Rogers, Linda, spouse Marty Giffen, and Carla, spouse Ron Schroeder, all of Cuba City, 12 grandchildren, Natalie, spouse Justin Kepley, Drew, spouse Jody Dieter, Allison, spouse Titus Bland Dieter, Aaron, spouse Lynn Rogers, Ryan Rogers, Brett, spouse Sarah Rogers, Tyler Griffin, Tara, spouse Ryan Kaiser, Tia, spouse Keith Black Griffin, Nicole, spouse Sam Parrott, Troy, spouse Amanda Schroeder, and Travis, spouse Amelia Schroeder, and 23 great-grandchildren and two on the way. He is also survived by four stepchildren, Brad, spouse Abby Gerke, Washington, D.C., Pam, spouse Paul Langkamp of Platteville, Wisconsin, Brian, spouse Lori Gerke of Hawthorne Woods, Illinois, and Linda, spouse Eric Van Natta of Lancaster, Wisconsin. Six step-grandchildren, Heather, spouse Chris Dieter, Sarah and Aiden Gerke, Jamie, spouse Mike Hawking, Andrew, spouse Caleb Van Natta, and Hannah, spouse Jared Schlieff, and eight step-great-grandchildren. He was preceded in death by his parents, his wife Teresa in 1997, his son Mark in 1989, his sister and brother-in-law, Thelma and Ed Follow, his in-laws, Eugene and Mabel Hickey, two sisters-in-law, Mary, spouse Bill Voigt, and Bernice, spouse Forrest Harwick, and a step-grandson, Josh Langkamp. In lieu of flowers, the family requests memorials be made to St. Rose Church of Cuba City Rescue Squad. Memorials may be sent to Harriet Dieter, 706 South Madison Street, Cuba City, Wisconsin, 53807. Special thanks to Dr. Bierce and Dr. White and Epinion Pavilion Nurse Home nurses and staff. Also to Father Flanagan and Deacon Bill for their many prayers and blessings. Online condolences for the family may be left at www.caseymcnett.com. Michael J. Bulow. Michael John Bulow, 79, of Dubuque, died Tuesday, November 10th, 2020, at the Mercy One at Dubuque Medical Center in Dubuque of COVID-19, surrounded by his loving family. Visitation will be from 3 p.m. until 6 p.m. Sunday, November 15th, 2020, at Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home and Cremation Service, 3860 Asbury Road. Please respect our current social distancing requirements. If you are not feeling well or unable to attend, we encourage you to visit www.hskfhcares.com to send a message to Michael's family. The massive Christian burial for Michael will be at 10:30 a.m. Monday, November 16th, 2020, at Church of the Resurrection with Father Phil Gibbs at the celebrant. Burial will be in Mount Olivet Cemetery. The Mass will be live streamed on Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home's Facebook page and will also be available to visit later at www.hskfhcares.com. Michael was born July 16th, 1941, in Dubuque, the son of Donald and Mabel Jockum Bulow. On the August 18th, 1962, he married Cheryl Ann O'Brien at the Church of the Nativity in Dubuque. Mike worked as an environmental engineer for John Deere Works Dubuque for 32 years. He completed his career with MB Environmental in Consulting. He was a member of the Parks and Recreation Commission, the Environmental Commission, Junior Achievement, and the Walhart Boaster Club. Mike enjoyed bowling and golfing. He even had a hole-in-one not once but three times at Thunder Hills Country Club. Survivors include his wife, Cheryl, one son, Brian, spouse Sherry Bulow of Elgin, Illinois, two daughters, Jennifer, spouse Jeremy Jensen of Dubuque, and Amy, spouse Joel Osten of Elkhorn, Nebraska, seven grandchildren, Jessica, spouse Randy, Kara Buella, Alyssa, spouse Michael Ellers, Jenna Jensen, Janice Jensen, Ariana Osten, and Jacob Osten, and four great-grandchildren, Landon, Claire, and Asher Karas, and Elijah Ellers, and his beloved cats, Monty and Millie. He is preceded in death by his parents. A special thank you to Paramount Ambulance and the nursing staff at Mercy One for their loving care and support. Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home and Cremation Services is in care of their arrangements. A photo tribute can be reviewed and condolences sent to the family by visiting Mike's obituary at www.hskfhcares.com. Raphael J. Tiggs. Raphael J. Ray Tiggs of St. Catherine, Iowa, passed away Tuesday, November 10th, 2020, at Unity Point Health Finley Hospital, a day short of his 84th birthday. Due to COVID-19 and our desire to keep all of our friends and family safe, a private mass of Christian burial will be at 10:30 a.m. Friday, November 13th, 2020, at St. Catherine Church with Father David Ambrosi officiating. Burial will be in the church cemetery with military honors accorded by the American Legion Post No. 6 and the Iowa Army National Guard. A live stream of the funeral and committal will be on the Leonard Funeral Home Facebook page. Ray was born on November 11th, 1936, the son of Arthur and Marcella Margot Tiggs. Ray was a United States Army veteran. He married Rosemary Rosie Rollos on October 29th, 1960, at St. Francis Church in Balltown. Ray worked for the former Dubuque Packing Company for over 27 years. He also owned and operated Ray Tiggs Body Shop, which started out with him painting tractors in his backyard and later grew into a full-service auto body shop, which he ran until he retired. Ray also developed the subdivision Overland View, where he lived and loved to keep busy helping his neighbors and friends. He was a member of the St. Catherine Holy Name Society, the Tri-State County Country Dancers, Key West Sportsman Club, and the Domino Club. He was very proud of his 1957 Ford Fairlane, and he could often be found cruising around the area with Rosie. He also loved to travel and took many trips with Rosie and their friends. Ray was a wonderful father and grandfather and was known for his big laugh and frequent shenanigans. Ray is survived by his four children, Dan spouse Carmen Tiggs of Rochester Hill, Michigan, Lori spouse Kevin Keller of Dubuque, Connie spouse Brian Tolk of Rock Island, Illinois, and Karen spouse Rob Powers of Dubuque, as well as his 10 grandchildren children, David's spouse Stephanie and Kyle Tiggs, Nick and Nathan and Noah Keller, Kristen, Jacob and Sam Talk, Trevor and Tyler Powers, and 4 great-grandchildren, Diana, Sylvia, Augustus, Gus, and Atticus Tiggs. He was preceded in death by his parents, his wife Rosie, and a sister, Calista Decker. Ray's family would like to thank the large circle of friends and neighbors who supported Dad over the years. Patricia L. Yeldon, 83, of Dubuque, died Tuesday, November 10th, 2020, at Luther Manor, Grand Meadows. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, a private funeral service will be held at noon Saturday at R. Redmire Lutheran Church and will be live-streamed on the Eagle Hoff Seeger and Casper Funeral Home Facebook page. Patricia was born March 22nd, 1937, in Lebanon, Illinois, the daughter of George and Patricia Murphy Coos. She graduated from Dubuque Senior High School, where she was all-state in choir and enjoyed playing basketball. She married Robert Yeldon at St. Paul's Lutheran Church on April 7th, 1956. Together, they had 8 children. She was a loving mother, grandmother, and wife. She enjoyed cooking and loving her family together for holidays. She was an active member of our Redmire Lutheran Church, where she taught Sunday school, sang in the choir, and worked in the church's office. She loved watching the Cubs and the Hawkeyes, or just about any sports team. She went to Cubs games often in her younger years and passed the tradition on to her children and grandchildren. She enjoyed sewing, knitting, cross-stitching, and traveling. Her favorite places to visit was Florida and Disney World. She was able to enjoy several trips to Florida. Her grandchildren spent their younger days in her loving care and enjoyed trips to the library and doing crafts with their grandma. Patricia is survived by her husband, Rob Yeldon of Dubuque, children, Deborah spouse Richard Martin of Flagstaff, Arizona, Georgia spouse Jack Pittman of Davenport, Florida, Patrice spouse Larry Border of Hanover Park, Illinois, John spouse Tina Yeldon of Piosta, Patrick spouse Billy Joe Yeldon of Poinciana, Florida, Kathy spouse Dean Mouser of Holy Cross, and Tony spouse Andrea Yeldon of Cedar Rapids, a son-in-law Tim Ganson of Geneva, Illinois, 14 grandchildren and 8 great-grandchildren. She was preceded in death by a daughter, Roberta Ganson, her parents and siblings, George Coos Jr. and James Coos. The family would like to thank Hospice of Dubuque for the care they provided for Pat in her last days. Special thanks also to Luther Manor Grand Meadows, Butler House nursing staff, and especially Kim H. for her loving care of their mother when they couldn't be with her due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Angela A. Farnham, Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin. Angela Ann Farnham, age 98, of Prairie du Chien, passed away peacefully Monday, November 9th, 2020, at Crossing Rivers Health in Prairie du Chien. She was born November 5th, 1922, in Gutenberg, Iowa, the daughter of Andrew and Gertrude Miller Petschy. She married William Farnham on October 4th, 1942, in Palmyra, Missouri. He preceded her in death on February 6th, 2000. In her younger years, Babe, as she was known by her siblings, worked at DBQ Packing Company and Battery Factory in Dubuque. Then, in 1968, they moved to Prairie du Chien, where they owned and operated Hillsdale Dairy until their retirement. She was a loving grandmother and great-grandma. She is survived by her children, Richard spouse Esther Farnham, Dan spouse Patricia Farnham, Diane spouse William McDonald, Donna spouse Mike Steiner, 14 grandchildren, 34 great-grandchildren, her siblings Bud spouse Nancy Petschy, Donna spouse Bill Steger, Bob spouse Mary Petschy, Judy spouse Joe Kramer, David Petschy, and sister-in-law Arlene Petschy. In addition to her husband, she was preceded in death by her parents, her daughter and son-in-law Della and Ken Hoskins, her twin sister Althea Buer Freeberger, siblings Leon Petschy, Marvin Petschy, Wilbur Petschy, Elori Petschy, Harlan Petschy, and Patricia Petschy. A massive Christian burial will be held privately at St. John's Church of the Holy Family Parish, with interment to follow in the Calvary Cemetery, both in Prairie du Chien. MSGR Charles Stolzel officiating. Garrity Funeral Home in Prairie du Chien is assisting the family. www.garrityfuneralhome.com. Marlene W. Detman, McGregor, Iowa. Marlene W. Detman, 62, of McGregor, died on Tuesday, November 10th, 2020, at his home. Visitation will be from 9 a.m. to noon Saturday, November 14th, at First Congregation Church in McGregor. The family will have a private graveside service at St. Wenceslaus Catholic Cemetery in rural McGregor. Leonard Grow Funeral Home and Cremation Service of Monona is assisting the family. Lynn Miller, Hanover, Illinois. Lynn Miller, 78, of Hanover, died on Sunday, November 8th, 2020, at his home. Services will be at 2 p.m. Friday, November 13th, at Hanover Methodist Church, where friends may call from 1 to 2 p.m. Sister Lois M. Friedman. Sister Lois M. Rafia Friedman, OSF 84, of Clara House, Dubuque, Iowa, died at 8:07 p.m. Tuesday, November 10th, 2020, at Clare House. A private rite of final commendation will be held at the Clare House Chapel, Mount St. Francis Center, at 1 p.m. on Friday, November 13th, 2020. Burial will be in Mount Calvary Cemetery. Sister Lois was born on November 6th, 1936, in Helber, Iowa, the daughter of Joseph and Matilda Spangler Friedman. She entered the Sisters of St. Francis August 25th, 1954, and made final profession of vows August 12th, 1960. Sister received her master's and PhD degrees in English at Purdue University. She ministered as an educator in Iowa at Dubuque, Waterloo, Templeton, and in Greenwood, South Carolina. She also ministered as English professor at Fayetteville, North Carolina. Sister served as assistant to the executive director of LCWR. Sister Lois ministered in several pastoral ministries while working as an IRS tax representative in Indianapolis. Sister is survived by her sisters, Charlotte Comer and Mary Smith, brother Joe Friedman, brother-in-law Ralph Loeffel Hawes, and her nieces, nephews, and Franciscan sisters. Sister was preceded in death by her parents, Joseph and Matilda Spangler, her sisters Patricia Gablin and Carol Loeffelholz, her brothers Merle Friedman and Ralph Friedman, and her in-laws Austin Comer, Dorothy Friedman, John Gablin, Jim Smith, and Donna Friedman. Memorials may be given to the Sisters of St. Francis of Dubuque, Iowa. Miller Funeral Home is in charge of the arrangements. Barbara A. Schultz, Cuba City, Wisconsin. Barbara A. Schultz, 82, of Cuba City, Wisconsin, died Monday, November 9th, 2020, at Mercy One Dubuque Medical Center, Dubuque, Iowa. Private family services will be held. Casey McNett Funeral Home and Cremation Services of Cuba City is assisting the family. Barbara was born on February 17th, 1938, in Cuba City, Wisconsin, the daughter of Lawrence and Aura Wilson Hardy. She attended Cuba City High School. Barbara married Raymond Schultz on June 18th, 1955, at St. Rose Church in Cuba City. Barbara was a housekeeper at Ipawan Pavilion and a custodian at the City Hall of Cuba City. She loved playing bingo, reading, and doing crossword puzzles. Survivors include her husband, Raymond, Cuba City, two daughters, Shelley spouse Hugh McDermott of Kenosha, Wisconsin, and Lisa Yetman of Quakertown, Pennsylvania, two sons, Michael spouse Kathy Schultz of Cuba City, and Stephen spouse Jewel Schultz of Crawfordsdale, Iowa, a sister, Marcy Kinsting of Brenton, Wisconsin, 11 grandchildren and 11 great-grandchildren. She was preceded in death by her parents, a sister, Shirley, and a brother-in-law, Melvin Kinsting. The family wishes to thank the staff of Mercy One Dubuque Medical Center and the Cuba City Rescue Squad. Memorials may be sent to the funeral home at 123 North Jackson Street, Cuba City, Wisconsin, 53807. Online condolences for the family may be left at www.kcmcnet.com. Rosemary M. Rowling, Bellevue, Iowa. Rosemary M. Rowling, 86, of Bellevue, died on Tuesday, November 10th, 2020, at Mercy One Dubuque Medical Center. A private funeral mass will be held at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, November 14th, at St. Joseph's Catholic Church in Bellevue. Complete arrangements are pending at Hatchman Muir Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Bellevue. Thomas J. Jacome. Thomas Tom J. Jacome, 68, of Des Moines and formerly of Dubuque, died on Monday, November 9th, 2020. Services will be held at 10:30 a.m. Friday, November 13th, at Holy Trinity Catholic Church in Des Moines. Isles Funeral Home in Des Moines is assisting the family. James J. Costell. James J. Costell, 80, of Madison, Wisconsin and formerly of Dubuque, died on Monday, November 2nd, 2020, at William S. Middleton Memorial VA Hospital in Madison. Services will be held at a future date. Gunderson Funeral Home in Madison is assisting the family. One more quick news and brief. Fenimore Memorial Building City Clerk's Office is closed. Fenimore, Wisconsin. Fenimore Memorial Building and City Clerk's Office now are closed to the public. In an announcement, the city said utility bill payments and any other city-related paperwork can be dropped off in the blue box near the north door located in Lincoln Avenue. For more information, call 608-822-6119. Moving to sports, college basketball, Northern Iowa Panthers. Duex joins UNI family. Older brothers paved the way for Hempstead guard to play in college by Jib Leitner. Michael Duex felt like a member of the family the moment he verbally committed to the University of Northern Iowa's men's basketball team in February. And family means everything to the 6'5", 200-pound guard from Dubuque Hempstead who follows his four older siblings into college basketball. On Wednesday, Duex signed his national letter of intent to play for the Panthers beginning next fall. He joined Cedar Falls standouts Landon Wolf and Chase Kerbat in the Panthers' three-player recruiting class. Quote, the feeling of being a part of the Panther family has always been there, even though it's been a little tougher because I can't go over and visit campus because of the pandemic, Duax said. The feeling's a little more exciting today because it's officially official. I'm signed and I really am a part of the Panther family, end quote. Duax spent his formative years of basketball watching his older brothers play college basketball. Robert Duax starred at the University of Wisconsin-Platteville, while Connor, Lucas, and Max Duax all play for NCAA Division II Upper Iowa University. Connor is a senior transfer from UW Oshkosh. Lucas is a redshirt sophomore and Max is a sophomore. Quote, it is a really cool to carry on that family tradition, end quote, said Michael Duax, the youngest of Bob and Katie Duax's five sons. Quote, growing up, there was a little bit of pressure, but they helped me through it, and I actually feel like they are the reason I am the player I am. Not many people have that opportunity to watch college basketball like I did and talk to people about it. They definitely helped me prepare to be a college basketball player, end quote. Michael Duax earned unanimous first team All-Mississippi Valley Conference accolades in his first two seasons on coach Kurt Duwetch's squad at Hempstead. As a junior, he averaged 20.9 points and 8.2 rebounds per game while being named the MVC Divisional Player of the Year and First Team All-State. He led the Valley Division in scoring with 482 points and rebounds with 189. Quote, Michael brings versatility to both ends of the floor, and quote, UNI basketball coach Ben Jacobson said in a release announcing his three signees. Quote, he plays every possession with great effort and energy, which allows him to impact so many plays. He scores the ball in transition at the rim and continues to improve as a three-point shooter. He also possesses the size and mobility to be a very good on-ball defender. We think Michael will be a tremendous two-way player for us, end quote. Duax will join another former Dubuque standout basketball player in Cedar Falls. Senior standout Noah Carter earned playing time as a true freshman last year while playing with seniors Spencer Heldman of Western Dubuque and Luke McDonald of Senior. Duax doesn't plan to look too far ahead to joining a UNI squad, predicting to win the Missouri Valley Conference this season. His focus will be on helping the Mustangs win the high school version of the MVC after going 15-8 a year ago. Quote, I'm really excited to go up to UNI and start with them, but we have a really good squad here and I want to focus on my senior year, end quote, Duax said. Quote, this is our last chance and I want to make the most of it. Signing and making everything official will help me focus on making this the best senior year I can have, end quote. And he believes he has plenty of work to do before the next fall. Quote, shooting and ball handling may sound like basics, but you can never get too good on either of them, he said. Obviously, I know I need to get bigger and stronger, but I also have to keep working on the basics. That's something I'll be working on the rest of my basketball career, end quote. More news in brief. New Director of Economic Development Main Street Program hired in Elkader, Iowa. The City of Elkader and Main Street Elkader Board of Directors recently announced hiring Ashley Alhoff as the City Economic Development Director of the Main Street Elkader Director. Alhoff will begin in the position on December 7th, according to the announcement. The role aims to develop the city's economy through attracting new businesses, promoting business expansion, and working on the retention of existing businesses. Quote, I see the potential and beauty of this area with a particular connection to the progressive and vibrant town of Elkader due to its amazing growth in the arts, tourism, local investment, sustainability, and more, end quote, Elhoff said in an announcement. Quote, I only hope to expand on this important efforts through this new role, end quote. A Clayton County native, although graduated from Upper Iowa University in 2018, she previously served as the co-chair and marketing coordinator for Elkader's Art in the Park Festival Festival and as Textile Brewing Company's event manager. Authorities, one hurt in Dubuque County crash after driver swerved to avoid wild turkeys, Sageville, Iowa. Authorities said turkeys played a role in a head-on crash that left a Dubuque man injured. David L. Becken, 65, of Dubuque, was taken by ambulance to Mercy One Medical Center with chest and head pain, according to a Dubuque County Sheriff's Department crash report obtained Wednesday. The crash occurred at about 2:50 p.m. Saturday on Rupp Hollow Road. The report states that Jeffrey A. Harry Jr., 26, of Dubuque, was eastbound when he swerved to avoid wild turkeys in the road. Becken was heading westbound at the time, and both drivers swerved into the eastbound lane to attempt to avoid a crash. Instead, their vehicles hit each other head-on and were totaled. Harry was cited with failure to yield half of the roadway. Man taken by ambulance to hospital after vehicle hits fence in Joe Davies County, Scales Mound, Illinois. One person was injured when a vehicle crashed into a fence Tuesday in Joe Davies County. Joshua S. Montgomery, 46, of Galena, was taken by ambulance to Midwest Medical Center in Galena for treatment, according to the Joe Davies County Sheriff's Department. The crash occurred at about 4:35 p.m. Tuesday on Sagecoach Trailer near Miller Ridge Road in rural Scales Mound. A press release states that Montgomery was driving when his vehicle left the roadway and hit a fence. The crash remains under investigation. NICC to offer five-week winter term, Piosta, Iowa. Northeast Iowa Community College will offer a five-week winter term in response to the COVID-19 pandemic. The winter term will run from December 17th through winter 21st. The sessions aim to serve students who have longer winter breaks at home because of the pandemic, according to press release. Courses are being offered in algebra, astronomy, developmental psychology, world geography, natural resources, conservation, and world civilization too. More information is available at nicc.edu/winterm. And that does it for today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Thursday, November 12th on IRIS. I'm your reader, Erin. You can access a recording of today's reading online at iowaradioreading.org at any time. As always, thank you so much for listening, and I hope you have a great day.